Revenue Chat episode 100. The Dream Business community wants to help you with your career and business. Are you ready for accelerated success? Check it out. The Dream Business community at tonydurso.com/community. Hey, get the Revenue Chat mobile app for your Android or iPhone. It's free. Download from onelink.to/revchat. That's onelink.to/revchat. John Mautner, the founder of Cycle of Success Institute, is a seasoned entrepreneur who launched and built 4 successful companies in the past 20 years. Inc. magazine named his first business as one of America's 500 fastest-growing companies. Now, John tells us the top 10 tools for building a profitable high-growth business, next on Revenue Chat. Hello again and welcome to this episode of Revenue Chat. In last week's episode 99, part 1, with John Mautner, we went over 4 of the top 10 tools to build a profitable high-growth business. Remember, these are not tools that John made up. They came from a survey of the last 100 companies he coached to get on the right track to grow faster. Using an approach he calls Voices of the Company, and then sitting down with a dream team of experts, John found something astounding. Every company has the same list of key points they need help with. John Mautner is founder of Cycle of Success Institute, COSI, or COSI, and gives us the remaining 6 tools in this second episode. His website is learncosi.com. That's learncosi.com. All right, Revenue Crew, let's rev it up. Get ready for John to show us the top 10 tools for building a profitable, high-growth business. Here we go. All right, John, number 5, please.
Okay, this one's cool. Poor inventory management. This wasn't for every type of company, you know, but for those construction companies that have a yard, maybe it's full of raw material, pipes and wires and connectors and all kinds of things they use, all that raw material they use on the job site. It also could be for a manufacturing company that has inventory that they need. You know, there's other types of companies that have inventory, but mainly, you know, sort of industrial companies, construction companies, you know. Could be restaurants also. Retailers deal with inventory all the time. You know, those are typical types of inventory type industries that deal with it. And inventory is a humongous investment for companies. And it's not being managed really well. And there's different kinds of inventory. There's like obsolete inventory. So I always ask a company that I work with, you know, okay, so if we went up to the top of the rafters in your warehouse, and we did the dust test. In other words, if I took my finger and I could scrape off like 2 inches of dust, you know, how long has that been sitting up there? You know, and often it's like, you know what? We just throw stuff up there and I don't even know what's up there anymore. And we have 100,000 square feet in the back and it's just cluttered and it's unorganized and there's obsolete, there's broken things. There's things that we just throw up there. We don't really keep track of very well. You know, so starting out with an inventory management system, we always have a tendency to want to look at the obsolete inventory to start. You know, what is really things that we could sell on eBay? You know, we could scrap it, get some little bit of money for scrap, or maybe just clear it out because it frees up space and it's maybe a safety hazard. And maybe there's some other things that with the inventory that are completely expired or obsolete or thrown up. It's kind of like cleaning out your sock drawer. I worked with one company and we started looking at their warehouse full of stuff. And Marge, who's the owner, said, you know, this is like our giant sock drawer. And we haven't organized our sock drawer in years. And all the socks some socks don't even have a match. Some socks are tied up, you know, with other socks that don't have the right pattern. You know, our sock drawer is a mess. And I said, well, that's a really cool way of looking at it. So what should we do with our obsolete inventory? So we started a process called 5S. 5S is a way to kind of get things cleaned and organized. So we started looking at the warehouse and saying, okay, what are clearly the things that are obsolete? We don't need it anymore. Can we sell it? And we started tagging items that we should probably sell. Should we scrap it? Like maybe it has some value. We could get the scrap guy to come by and pick it up and give us a little bit of money for it. You know, or should we just simply get rid of it and throw it away? And so we start tagging these items, and we freed up a lot of free space within the obsolete inventory. It was like getting the sock drawer cleaned up. So that was a starting point. One of the things about doing the inventory, like, have you ever cleaned out your sock drawer? Like you were so tired of everything being all mixed up that you cleaned it out and it was beautiful. Have you ever had that done?
Oh, absolutely. And my sock drawer is absolutely pristine. There's nothing in it but socks that match, by the way. But do not go into my desk drawer.
Okay.
Same difference.
So here's the thing. Your sock drawer is pristine. It's beautiful. The question is, can we keep it that way? Do we have a tendency to, like, a month or two later, all the socks are mixed up again? Do you think that's possible?
Never in my household.
Okay, well, there's something wrong with you, Tony. But anyway.
I know, because I'm Italian, right? It's just everything is jumbled. But actually, a testament to my wife who takes care of that. She makes sure that everything is always perfect. I can't mess it up. And if I did, next week it would be perfect again.
Okay, well, that's a great philosophy, right? Somebody's got to take care of the inventory. You know, companies might have millions of dollars of inventory in their shop somewhere, whether it's, you know, in the restaurant, in the freezer, it's inventory, you know, on the retail level, there might be stuff on the shelves that's on the inventory. You know, if it's a manufacturer, they've got a warehouse full of stuff, distribution companies, construction companies, they all have this inventory. They all need your wife to come help them. Keep it clean, okay? But we can't get your wife everywhere, unfortunately. So what she's doing, though, is she's got it organized, right? And then she maintains it. She makes sure that we keep it up to speed. And so one of the biggest things about inventory management is the maintenance of it. You know, once you've done obsolete inventory and you've cleaned out all your junk, you know, that's in the sock drawer, you know, it's about sustainability. How do we keep it going? How do we keep it organized? So create some ways to manage the inventory in a way that keeps things organized. You know, finding the inventory, you know, if you've got your purple socks in the drawer and you need those quickly, you know, should they be on the top or should they be buried in the bottom somewhere? So it's like, the inventory that's fast moving, maybe we need to have that up front so we can find it. You know, labeling shelves and racks and having a way to find things quickly and put things in the right place every time is a big part of inventory management, because the less inventory, the faster we can turn the inventory, the more cash we have, you know, and it's really about making sure we don't build too much inventory that eats up a lot of cash for companies. They might have no money in the bank, but they have $10 million in inventory. Well, that's maybe up too much inventory. You know, maybe it's too much. And maybe we need to have a better balance. Maybe we can get by with $5 million in inventory and we can turn that a lot faster and order what we need when we need it. And there's this concept called just-in-time inventory. So why buy 100 cans of paint, you know, if I'm going to use, you know, that might be enough for a year, you know, and I say, can we get by with 1 month's worth of paint instead of an entire year's? You know, can we get by with 5 gallons right now instead of 100? And the answer is yeah. Well, there we go. So we just had 95 gallons of paint that we didn't have to buy. And we can, you know, assuming that we can get it quickly. Now, if we have to take 6 months to get these 100 gallons of paint in, then we have to consider that in terms of our purchasing. But basically, you know, a lot of things we can get fairly quickly. You know, so get into more of a just-in-time inventory system where your inventory is almost zero. And a lot of like Toyota has been really famous on having just-in-time inventory. By the way, what they do is they have their suppliers of parts right down the street. So if they need parts, they can call up almost daily and say, I'm going to need 100 of these tomorrow. And they show up on their doorstep 100 and they use those 100. And therefore, they don't carry a lot of inventory. They don't have a lot of cash tied up. So think about how you can manage your inventory better in terms of getting it organized, you know, getting rid of obsolete inventory, getting it just in time. But companies can have a huge impact on their cash flow if they can have a better way of managing inventory.
Well said. Excellent points, John. Beautiful. I love it.
You're welcome. Well, these are all things that, you know, I hear, and then we work through, companies have worked through these issues, and I'm sort of sharing what they've done really well.
All right, John, number six, please.
Okay, which number six is estimating and bidding errors. And so I had a company that sold seafood. And what they did is they actually put a price on the box of the seafood that they would send out. And we started looking at the cost, what it actually costs to make this box of seafood. So the cost of the box of seafood was $10. And yet we put a price of $9 on it. They didn't know it cost actually $10 to make it, but they thought $9 was a good number for it. So they would send out hundreds of boxes, and every time a pallet would go out, it's like, why don't you just put a $100 bill on the pallet and give that away to your customers? And they finally realized that, you know, we really can understand our true cost of what we bid and estimate what we're going to sell our product for. It made a huge difference for them. So I said to them, okay, well, you know, let's play a game. I'm going to give you a dollar and you give me a dollar 10. I'm going to give you another dollar and you give me a dollar 10. And we're going to do this 10 million times. Are you ever going to make it up in volume? Because they thought they would. They thought, you know, if we ship out enough, we'll make it up in volume. But every single time a box was going out the door, they lost a dollar without even really knowing it, because they were using sort of an old pricing model. They didn't realize that the price of the seafood was changing, the price of the box was changing, the price of the shipping was changing, the price of the shrink wrap was changing. I mean, all these prices were changing on their raw materials without really understanding that on an ongoing basis, they were giving the product away for free. They were losing money on every single box. So take a quick look at, you know, pull apart all the costs that it really takes to make the product or the service and get it out the door, and add these things up. And then, you know, you'll get a better sense of what my pricing is. I had a company that painted rooms, and they would walk through, they take their tape measure, and okay, this room is 10 by 10 and I'll paint it for $200. So they were just square footing the paint. And I said, well, how did you come up with that number? Well, it's what we've been using. My dad did it this way. And I said, well, has the cost of labor gone up? Yeah. Has the cost of materials, paint, gone up? Yeah. So, you know, why is it that we keep square footing it? It doesn't work. So these things were putting these companies out of business. So it's a really bet your company type decision. But take a quick look at everything that goes into all the ingredients that go into the recipe of your product and service, and add it all up, and then bid in a way where you can continue to be profitable. So that's bidding or estimating.
Very good. All right. Makes perfect sense. Excellent. Number seven, please.
Number seven is tight cash flow. This came up all the time. Why is there tight cash flow in companies? Part of it could be that it's your bidding or estimating errors not right. Part of it could be as a result of your not inventory management. It could be you're not scheduling properly. It could be that you have lack of standard procedures. It could be lack of inconsistent quality. You know, all these things can kind of add up to having tight cash flow. So how do we get to improve our cash flow in our company? Well, the first thing you want to do is look at your collections. Like, who owes you money? And make sure that you collect your money on a regular basis. Faster. Collect it faster. You know, how do we do that? Well, we need a procedure in place. So let's get an SOP on what we tell customers on what our collection procedures are. Make sure we do business with companies that will pay us on time. And they'll honor that and will not be sort of adversarial to us, but they want us to make money. So they pay on time on a regular basis. And if a company's got let's say the company owes you $50,000 in invoices, and you need that money to make payroll, you've got to get it collected. And let's say you call the company and say, you know, we owe us $50,000. What can we do on these last three invoices? And they say, well, I'm having a problem and I can't pay you right now because I haven't been paid. Well, okay, so then what can we do? How do we put something together that makes sense? Maybe there's a payment plan that we can come up together. Can you pay us $10,000 a week for the next 5 weeks so we can get caught up? You know, do something that makes sense in terms of helping them improve their cash flow so you can get paid too. You know, if companies owe you money and you're not getting paid, then you've got a significant problem on your hands. And this can go into the millions of dollars. I've seen it happen. And companies can, some of their suppliers that, you know, companies they do business with may file bankruptcy. And then what are we going to do? How are we ever going to collect it? And we might as well write the whole thing off. So stay in touch with your customers. Get close to them. Help them with their cash flow problem so you can improve your cash flow problem also. So collect money quickly and get out. And on the other side is get your invoices out on time. You know, make these things happen quickly. email invoices versus mailing them. You know, get invoices out early if you can, electronically, you know, get things happening. So every day you improve your cash flow is more money you're going to have in your bank account. It's really simple, but it works.
Excellent point. And you accented a very key part of that is stay in touch with your customers. If they're not paying or if there's an issue, you won't know unless you talk to them. And if you talk to them, you can sort it out.
Yeah, I mean, they're business people. You know, they've got problems too. And this is really notoriously bad in the construction industry where, you know, they will tell you, well, we haven't been paid by the general contractor, so we can't pay you because you're a subcontractor to us. And yet the company says, well, look, I've got to make payroll on Friday. Well, I can't pay you because I haven't been paid. So this kind of like goes around and around and it gets really kind of ugly. So again, understand your customers, stay in touch with them. Don't be adversarial with them. You know, they're people, they have businesses. They're trying to make a go of it also. So, you know, try and work something out, you know, get payments in advance, get retainers, you know, collect money faster. It's going to make a big difference.
Excelente. I love it. The Dream Business community wants to help you with your career and business. As you know, jobs can be fickle. Here today, gone tomorrow. And owning a business has its own frailties. Bloomberg says 8 out of 10 entrepreneurs fail in the first 18 months. A Harvard study says 3 out of every 4 venture-backed firms fail. And there's other sources with shocking figures of their own, which all point to one very conclusive point. These are scary times we live in. Let's help you in the dream business community. Yes, you. Let's try to give you the information you need now to boost your career or business. And I'll be there every step of the way, helping you along with other experts in many industries. Are you ready for accelerated success? Check it out, the Dream Business Community at tonydurso.com/community. That's tonydurso.com/community. And we're back with John Mautner talking about top 10 tools to build profitable high-growth business. All right, John, number 8, please.
So lack of project management. You know, basically project management is all about making sure you get something delivered on time. And I see companies often don't have a good project management process where we can get things delivered or done on time. You know, I had a law firm. And their job was to create these very complex depositions and get them to report so they could use them in court. And the depositions had a lot of moving parts. You know, there was different people writing different parts of the deposition. How do I pull all this together to make sure that I have a time to review it and understand it and then present it to the judge so for state my case? And so, you know, project management is really very important. So making sure that we are working together in teams to manage projects successfully. I think there's something that's really powerful, which is the Gantt chart. You know, it's a Gantt chart. And let's say you've got 10 activities you have to be done, and this whole project's got 10 moving parts, and you have a 90-day timeline. So a Gantt chart is really a vertical chart of the first thing you have to do is type up the parts of the report. And that's going to take me 45 days. So you have a line that going on a vertically across to the 90 days. That's going to take 45 days. The other part of it, the other 8 parts might take 10. Some parts of this report might take 20 days. Other parts of the report might take 2 days. So each of these segments have different timelines. So by the time I'm in week, and you do it week by week. So let's say I'm in week 5. That means these 4 parts should have been done by now. And these other 2 parts are ongoing. So it's kind of a visual way to look at the entire project and really get a perspective of how you're doing to make sure you get it on time. So a Gantt chart can be really powerful, rarely used, but super powerful.
Yes, I've seen a lot of these points in use in the various companies I've worked with, especially the Gantt chart. Very important. Very good. Excellent. All right. Number 9, please.
So number 9 is communication. And communication is almost like vapor. It's like, I can't touch it. It's almost nebulous, but it's happening all over the place inside companies. And communication challenges can be things like from the office to the field. you know, from the field to the office, from the company to the customer, from the company, customer to the company, you know, from department to department, from person to person. And so, you know, communication is everywhere within how do I email properly to make sure people understand what I need and I'm trying to get something communicated. You know, part of communication also begins with listening. And listening is a skill that takes time to get good at. Some of us, I think, are probably born great listeners. I've always felt that I'm not a great listener. And I've tried to learn the skills to be a better listener. And the concept of listening is seek to understand before you're understood. And if you let that person talk. I was having lunch with my daughter, and she's 20 years old, and she was telling me about this project she's working on and this thing and her boss and la, la, la. And I just sat there and listened. You know, I wanted to interject about 5 times, but I didn't want to interrupt her. So after she gave me the full download, she goes, you know, Dad, you're a really good listener. And I said, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, she wants to be heard. People want to be heard. And so there's some skills people can have by listening really well. And I think it all begins with becoming an effective listener. And it's amazing what you can learn if you just listen. I think we have one mouth and 2 ears, right? So maybe we should sort of listen and from that perspective. You know, listen twice as much as we talk. It can be really important. You want to know a couple really interesting listening techniques, Tony, that I found really effective?
Sure, I would love to hear them, John.
So when it comes to listening, you know, first off, don't interrupt the person. You know, we can actually... our minds have the ability to almost be able to know exactly where that person's going. We can probably complete their sentence, and therefore we'll interrupt them. And I find that if we just shut up and listen, people have a tendency to talk more, you get better information, and if you're about to interrupt somebody, try your very best to not. And if somebody's talking to you, here's another technique I find really interesting. If somebody's talking to you and they finish their sentence, people have a tendency to immediately jump right into to say what they wanted to say. So there's no dead space. But I find that if there's dead space, that may give the person the opportunity to talk even further. So what I do is if somebody's talking to me, I might, and they've stopped with their thought, instead of me just jumping right in, I count to 3. 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, which seems like an eternity when you're having a conversation. But what happens more often than not, that person keeps talking. They further their point. They get in more detail of what they're thinking. And it's a great way to get that person to give them the space to continue to think and talk more versus you just jumping in and saying what you wanted to say. So that's kind of an interesting technique that I think is really effective. So don't interrupt. Have some dead space between the conversation so they can further their thought. And really try and gather as much information in terms of what you're really understanding and mirror back what they said. So what you said is that the purple product needs to get shipped on Tuesday to customer ABC. Is that correct? So mirror back what they said to make sure you understood exactly what they meant, to make sure there's nothing lost in translation. But when it comes to other types of communication, I think one of the most effective things people can do that we've been able to, you know, coach companies to do is have good meetings. You know, I think a meeting that doesn't have any impact becomes a monumental waste of time, and people don't get jaded and they don't want to go to meetings anymore. What I find is this stand-up 5-minute meeting is really cool. So it's a way to get in a fast-paced environment. You gather people together in that department and you say, okay, what's hot? What's got to go out the door today? You know, Tony's not working today because he's sick at home. And therefore, you know, Carla, you've got to fill in over here. And we've got to get this and this done. So it's just about the most pressing, immediate, important things that we need to do today. And I think I see companies doing sort of a quick 5-minute stand-up meeting, and it's only 5 minutes. Conversations that are more in-depth can happen outside the meeting, but it's just a quick flash of what we've got to get done today. Make sure everybody's on the same page. You have a little huddle, high five, and you go after it. And I find that that can be really effective for companies.
Great points. And I must say and add on to that and accentuate that the communication part is so important, done well, done right, exactly as you stated, can lead to also very excellent relationships in one's life. I believe communication.
So true.
I believe communication is the foundation that my wife and I have been together almost 25 years. That is the key most thing. Just really, audience, just what he said. Listen, and don't react, and just listen. Get the information, and then respond once the other person has said. It may seem like it takes a lot more time. You're going to have more fun, and you're going to get more cooperation as well.
And I think the other party, whether it's your spouse, girlfriend, significant other, business partner, customer, whoever that is, let them talk. Give them the space to talk. People want to be heard, you know? And you have to respect what they say. I think if there's good communication, you get respect. And I think there's respect, there's trust. And I think there's trust, you can accomplish almost anything. So do you feel, Tony, like in your, congratulations on being married 25 years, because a lot of people don't even make it 5 years. But I mean, do you think that that communication has been for you a key thing for your success?
100%, John. Without it, there would be, the relationship would have been gone a long time ago. Trying to not listen but assert what I think is supposed to be just leads to disaster. And I am a PhD in that. I forgot, I didn't mention that. A little disclaimer. PhD here in the School of Hard Knocks. I've had prior relationships and I know how to make them bad. Okay. I'm really good at it. And I learned, you know, you have to communicate. And it's very tough, especially for an Italian. I just want to jump in there, use my hands all the time and just keep talking. But people don't work that way all the time, unless you're in a party.
That's true. It's true. I mean, I think that, you know, you just got to, the starting point is being a great listener. And it's not easy. I have a tendency to interrupt people. And I do it and I stop doing it because I think I was pissing people off, you know. So I would just give people the space they need to talk, whatever it is. And I found that also in my relationships, that it's been really beneficial to just let people's air, get it all out, you know, whatever it is, good, bad, or ugly, let's talk about it. And they feel much better that they are just being heard, and that alone creates that kind of environment where you kind of create a deeper understanding and I think more intimacy in any type of relationship.
Excellent again, and well said, John. Okay, now drum roll, please.
Number 10 is lack of innovation. Most companies, when I start working with them, it's sort of the land of not invented here. And I kind of believe in something that if you're not going to innovate or iterate, you're going to evaporate. I think it's that simple. Okay, now I know we think of innovation as sort of like we've got to create a whole new product or a brand new out of the box, brand new thing that doesn't even exist in the world. And that's an innovation, right? But I don't believe that to be the case. I think innovations are small little iterations all the time. You know, when I started selling roasted almonds, I was always trying to think about how do I make this more efficient? How do I make this more productive, easier for me? So for instance, I would open up the cabinet and it had a 50-pound box of almonds in there. I'd have to stick my head, you know, down below, pull out the box, scoop up, you know, 8 cups of almonds, throw it into the kettle, bend down, stick the almonds back in there. It's a 50-pound box all day back. It gets heavy, okay, you know? So I thought to myself, you know, I could keep doing this the same way forever, or how do I make it better? And that's just something, I think I'm just hardwired to always ask, how do I make it better? Because there's no end to how much better something can be. So what I did is the next carts I built, I actually had a full extension track drawer. Imagine like a big Tupperware container on a track, and you could pull the entire drawer out, 3 feet out, and the entire 50-pound box of almonds, bag of, you know, Rubbermaid. I've actually got a Rubbermaid, stop using boxes. I'd pour the entire 50 pounds into this Rubbermaid container that had an airtight seal, and I would slide the whole thing out beautifully, just on a beautiful, really smooth track. I'd pop open the lid, scoop it, and I'd slide it back in there with just 2 fingers, and I could pour the almonds in the kettle, and the drawer slid closed nicely. And wow, how cool is that, right? It's a simple thing. I'm just having a drawer that pulls out, but it made a difference in terms of efficiencies, in terms of, you know, making the cart easier to move around. I had better wheels because we'd be schlepping these carts back and forth from one part of the theme park to the other. And, you know, some of the wheels were kind of plasticky and they broke. And so how do I get a better wheel on this thing so I could roll it with ease? Because I wasn't pushing the cart all the time. somebody that might be 5 feet tall and 100 pounds has got to push this, you know, 500-pound cart around, and I want to make sure that he or she can do it without straining their back or hurting themselves and make it easy. So I found these really nice casters, really high quality. They spun like crazy, and I started mounting those on the bottom of the cart. So I was always trying to figure out how to innovate and make something better. So I created something called the ABCs of innovation. And I think this is these ABCs, anybody can use it to really start becoming more innovative company. And if you're more innovative, you've got a leg up on the competition and you can really grow faster for your business. So can I share with you the ABCs of innovation?
I would love to hear them, please. Thank you.
Sure. So the A is for ask. Okay. So what I want to do is start asking your people what they believe could be an innovative way to make something better. And it could be anything. I don't care what it is. Anything could be better. So the B is to do that, to ask, you want to use B, which is brainstorming. So you want to put your people around the table. You might even put a product in the, let's say you've got some sort of a product that you make, a physical product, and you put it in the middle of the table and say, okay, we're going to take a couple hours today and we're going to brainstorm on how do we make this better? How do we make it more cost effective? How do we improve the look and the feel and the user experience for this particular product, for instance? But it doesn't have to be a product. It could be a service. How do we make the service more efficient, more effective, better customer experience? How do we make the service more profitable? So you ask your people by brainstorming. And what will happen is if you use a technique that I call focused brainstorming, where one person at a time will talk. Okay, so Tony, you have 3 minutes to tell us all the ideas you have in your mind of how to make something better. How do we become more innovative? How do we do it better, faster, cheaper? And then somebody's going to go next, and the next person. So in a matter of a couple hours, you've gone around the room twice with your team of people, and you usually can generate 50 to 100 really creative ideas through the brainstorming. So that's important. You can generate as many out-of-the-box, crazy, innovative, you know, ideas you can think of that'll make something more innovative for us, okay? So innovation can start with, A, you ask, then you do that by brainstorming. Then what you do is you take all those ideas and you consolidate them because you can't implement everything. So let's consolidate all those ideas we generate into what I might call the top three. What are the top three things we can do right now out of everything we talked about? We value everyone's opinion. Everybody did a wonderful job at brainstorming. But what are the top three and most impactful things we could do right now that we'd really focus on? So then the D is ABCD of the ABCs of innovation is decide. Everybody decides on the top three things that are most important. Now, everything is important, but what are those top three? So make a decision on those. And then the E, A, B, C, D, E of innovation is execute. Maybe you put teams of people together to say, let's figure out to make this better. Let's have a team together to make it prettier. Let's have a team that'll make it higher quality. Let's have a team that comes together to make it more efficient. So put some teams together by executing the ideas, but do it through teams of people that can work together, maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 person team that can work together in a particular one of these three items and start to implement those things. Hopefully that makes sense in terms of the ABCs of innovation.
Makes perfect sense. Awesome. Great points, John. Wow. We just hit the top 10 tools and tips and pieces and advice to build a profitable high growth business. It's amazing. But yes, these 10 plus the innovation points, that will do it. I can see the value in these. That's a lot of stuff.
So all these top 10 are in my number one best-selling business book on Amazon. The name of the book is called The Profit Pattern. So you can Google, you can go to Amazon and type in The Profit Pattern. You know, you can type in theprofitpattern.com and get the book. But, you know, it really gets a lot more detail. I know we only had an hour, but each of these top 10 is broken down one by one with chock full of techniques and things, other case studies of what other companies have been able to do, you know, to really transform your business, drive performance, empower your people, accelerate the productivity and profitability of almost any type of company.
Fabulous, John. And question, if we go to your website, learncosi.com, is there information there on how to get that book? Or I should put the profitpattern.com in the show notes here, okay?
Yes, so use the profitpattern.com in the show notes. Yep.
You got it. I will do that. Excellent. Okay, everyone. Those are great points. I'm sure you're going to listen to this over and over again and write that all down. But there's a few more points we want to find out. I want to know, John, I always like to really get into what my guest is expert is all about. And I like to talk about purpose now at this point of the show. I want to know what you want to change in the world. Not that you're going to necessarily change it, but what's your drive? What drives you to keep on, John?
You know, I think that there is nothing quite as cool as living your dream. Every entrepreneur is really a dreamer. That's why they get up, because they have this dream of doing something amazing. Yet so few ever achieve the kind of results they really get. I was very fortunate to be able to sort of grow my first company into becoming one of the 500 fastest growing companies in the country. And I got to tell you, that was a cool dream. But the reality of doing it and being there and traveling around the world and meeting people and going to the White House and all kinds of crazy things, it was surreal at times. So living the dream is really much better than dreaming the dream. And I think if I can help entrepreneurs achieve their dreams and objectives faster, and along the way help their communities, help their employees, help their suppliers, you know, so on and so forth, that creates a huge, I think, economic impact. And I think that small businesses are the engines that are going to make the company better, the country better, rather. And I think that continuing to help businesses achieve their goals faster, and so they can have a better life. And I can tell you, living the dream is great, but being able to help others succeed has really been a passion of mine. And, you know, I've been able to work with thousands of people who've made millions of dollars as a result of it. And I want to continue to do that, because it really does change people's lives, especially when their business is in trouble and they're struggling, and they meant the livelihoods of the company is they're not going to make it. They're not going to be around 6 months from now. And when you see them confronting the issues, working together, making things happen, and 6 months later they have a successful company, it changes everything in their lives, because everyone's businesses is their biggest investment. And therefore, making that more successful, I think, has a real impact on their lives. And I've been able to make a lot of friends, because I've had companies grow and succeed where they otherwise never would have, and they're friends for life, because I feel like I'm making a positive difference. So that's, I guess, something that gets me up in the morning.
Very cool, John. Thank you so much for sharing that. Your passion, your devotion to help others comes through so loud and clear in what you have to say and how you've developed this. And we want to thank you very much for sharing all this with us.
Well, Tony, I'm a fan of the show. It's an honor to be on the show, and I completely enjoy your company.
Well, awesome. All right, John. Well, we're close to wrapping up. Is there anything else that you would like our audience to know about?
You know, just go to The Profit Pattern. Take a look at the book. I think it'll be a quick read. It's only 100 pages, but it's chock full of information, I think, that may help you if you have a business become more successful at it. And please connect with me. Can I give out my email address? Is that possible?
Sure, absolutely. Nope.
Okay, so yeah, that's great. So it's John, J-O-H-N, dot Mautner, which is Mautner, at learn, LEARN, COSI, COSI.com. So John dot Mautner at learn, COSI.com. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. If you got a question, business challenge, love to talk to you about it.
Very good. And you know, I'll put that in the show notes too, in the highlights of the show, so that if someone didn't get it, they can just look down on the highlights and get it really rapidly.
Perfect. Thank you, Tony.
Well, great. My pleasure. Well, once again, John, I sincerely and deeply mean it. Thank you very, very much. It is my honor to have you on the show. I learned a lot. I loved it. It was great.
Well, thank you. I enjoy your company, and hopefully we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely. Once again, everyone, it's John Mautner from Learn COSI, the Cycle of Success Institute. His website is learncosi.com. Also, you can say it as COSI. Well, all right. Well, thank you, everyone, and stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. Next on Revenue Chat is episode 101 with Priest Willis. He's the Director of Affiliate Marketing for Affiliate Mission, the fastest growing affiliate management startup in North Carolina. He got his start in affiliate marketing in the early 2000s, where he cut his teeth building a few niche affiliate sites and managing company sites like Lenovo, Atomic Park, and also Buy Costumes, where he grew their affiliate program exponentially and won several industry awards. Priest shows us how to hack our job to build a life next on Revenue Chat. All right. Thanks again, everyone. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely.